I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight inside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening tonight in the this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Wow, so many interesting things have happened and are happening. I'm going to share some of them with you tonight. Let me see. There really is a war going on, and it's a cultural war. It's a war between those who hate Christians, those who hate freedom, and those who want to bring about a new world order, a new socialist world order, and things are getting nasty. Oh, of course, we've seen all sorts of websites shut down, like Stormfront, Daily Storm. Now the Daily Storm is back up. We've seen domain names just plain canceled or stolen by the bigs that control them. And a couple of nights ago, on the Trump phenomenon, Tuesday night. That was last night, as a matter of fact. James Kelso, who is the chief host of the Trump Phenomenon, which is on every night, every weeknight at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on RBN, that's Republic Broadcasting, rbn.org, check it out. Every weeknight at 9 Eastern Time, the Trump Phenomenon for 1 hour. James Kelso is a host, I'm a co-host, as is George from Maryland. And we're talking about the big corporations that are our enemy. You know, in perhaps somewhat simpler times, when Jamie and I were both John Birchers back in the late 60s and 70s, we knew about a conspiracy, although I don't think the conspiracy as outlined by the John Birch Society was really the whole story, but it's part of the story. Anyway, we were aware of a conspiracy of powerful people, and not just communists. And there was this strange alliance, and this goes right back to the founding of communism and the funding of communism, between what might appear to be enemies. Certain banks and capitalists, a lot of big capitalists who supported communism. And that would superficially seem surprising, because communism talks about nationalizing the means of production and taking away the property of landlords and farmers and so on, and treating them as oppressors. Well, so one would wonder, well, in fact, many of us did wonder, surely could this be true? And it was. And then on a deeper basis, but why? Why would, a big business back tyranny that has a good chance, if it succeeds, of taking away their wealth? Well, it turned out that had in fact happened. And what some people really wanted was power. And they imagined, correctly or not, when the communists took power, that they would themselves be in power. Anyway, we find today one of the mortal enemies of freedom of speech are some of the high-tech companies, like Google and Facebook, that are only too eager to massively violate the rights of clients, and on the basis that their ideas are wrong. Well, they'll phrase it a little differently. They'll say that you violate our community standards agreement. Well, of course, the community standards agreements are extremely vague, and deliberately so. So what they're able to do is to just simply wholesale violate the rights of Americans and Canadians to freedom of speech. Now, in America, if government did that, it would be illegal. That would be violating the First Amendment. However, the First Amendment only applies to rules set by government. And this is where I think we're going to have to be a little tough and go against perhaps the libertarian side of our natures. I would agree that a person has the right to do what they wish with their own property. The problem, as our forefathers found, was that where there is a monopoly, or let's say a virtual monopoly, that power becomes tyrannical. As long as there are two restaurants in town, I can say, well, I'm not going to serve whatever, let's say, redheaded women in my restaurant. But there's another restaurant, so they won't go without food. But if I had a monopoly, I was the only provider of a service, then the state, I think with some justification, steps in and it says, well, that's a monopoly. And as a monopoly, you have a certain obligation to the community. You must serve everybody. Let's say everybody who will pay and behaves, but you're under that obligation. And I think we're going to have to move in that direction. Now, Jamie takes a bit of a longer run view. He says, well, Trump got, I believe, 66 million votes. These are 66 million people committed to major changes. And that may or may not be true. I think some people would vote for Republican regardless. Others, yes, absolutely on side with Trump. But let's see, there's a substantial number of people. And he says that that the market will eventually discipline these people who have so violated our rights.
I'm a little less hopeful on that in the short term, because while that may in the long run be the way things will play out, in the short run, these tyrannical companies are able to do incalculable harm to people. And I think we should be demanding that government step in and invoke the antitrust laws, and that these companies must be compelled to be fair to people, and must be compelled to stop violating people's rights to freedom of speech. Because where you have a virtual monopoly, these organizations are able to do what government might want to do, but dares not. Anyway, I think we should start talking. I think we should start talking more emphatically about these types of things. These companies have massively violated our people's rights, and that number one, we will remember. As I said to Jamie on the show, I'm not into making threats. I'm also not making empty threats. There's no point threatening, well, we're going to get you. You know, if you're really not in much of a position to get anybody, because at this point, we are still fairly modest in size and power. But I think we should start talking in this direction. Not of getting, but of bringing these companies and these monopolies into line, because there are a lot of allies up there, people all from various points of the spectrum, who've had their rights violated by these big corporations. Here's an interesting video: Uniting a Western Civilization for Freedom and Liberty. Democrats jumping the shark, losing their minds. If you didn't think we are in a cultural battle, a battle that seeks to destroy the very heart and soul of Western civilization, then you've been locked in a broom closet for the past 10 months. Not content with just getting high and living in squalor, the ragtag group of disgruntled children wearing Halloween masks, donning Marxist clothing, and calling themselves Antifa, which is originally anti-fascists, have organized to such a degree that the dopey Democrat elected leaders now praise this gang of terrorists as the second coming of America's founding fathers. And this is the scary thing. These are street thugs and terrorists. We have only two problems with that arrangement. First, the Antifa scum are truly dedicated to the violent overthrow of capitalism and will jump the shark to use any event to shock America into listening to the disturbed voices. Second, the Democrats are endorsing this insanity. Thus, a full frontal attack against the foundation of American culture, social organization, and political stability is developing right before our eyes. In this video, Tom Trento issues a warning to all real Americans to understand that this modus operandi of the progressive left will gradually cause their own political demise. Moreover, great damage can be done to our country unless our leaders, especially our law enforcement agencies, return the rule of law to the First Amendment right of free assembly without the threat of physical attack. Now, that really is what the police signally failed to achieve in Charlottesville. The fact that the police were apparently told to stand aside, were told to force the patriots, the white nationalists, to enter the park, going right in front of the Antifa lines. This was forcing the two sides, and certainly the Antifa were very violent. The violence occurred. There was fighting, and then this gave the authorities the excuse they needed to shut down the rally, to declare a state of emergency. This of course is completely bogus. The duty of the police was to ensure the First Amendment rights of all. Yes, even the Antifa, as long as they were peaceful. How would you do that? Well, that's elementary.
And I've heard several policemen, including a former South African who was there, say it's simple. You keep the Antifa, let's say, on one side of the street, and let them wave their signs or do their protests, as long as it's not violent, and you let, at a safe distance, let the nationalists into the park to have their speeches and their rally. It's the failure of the police to do that led to the violence in Charlottesville. And this is, I'm going to try to get this video here by Tom Trento, who talks about this issue. We will see if that is available. Apparently it may not be, so we'll move on to another topic. One of the ongoing issues in Europe and to some extent in Canada is the massively offensive dress of many Muslim women. Now, here, of course, we find ourselves as libertarians somewhat torn between the reluctant agreement that a person has a right to, within reason, wear whatever clothes they want, certain standards of society. One of the flashpoints, of course, has been the full face coverings, like the burqa, which is a complete head to foot bag with a kind of a gauze cover for the eyes, which allows a certain amount of the woman can see, kind of see vaguely, is through glasses. That's one. And the other is the niqab, which is a head-to-foot veil with a slitty slit for the eyes. France bans the public wearing of the niqab and the burqa, and in my opinion, rightly so. For one thing, this is not really a matter of dress. This is more a matter of disguise. Many people see it also as a matter of women's degradation or enslavement. But in Western society, of course, we have to keep insisting this is our society. No, not theirs. It's ours. And it ought to be our rules, our backyard. But in our society, people want to be able to relate to other people without a disguise. We want to be able to relate to other people we can see who they are. In fact, certainly here in the West, we often say, well, we can test a person's reliability or maybe even truthfulness by looking in their eyes. Well, how can you look in their eyes if you can't see their eyes? It really is a problem. I'm going to digress for just a minute. I'm going to read a very excellent article in today's National Post by Barbara Kay about just this issue. But I digress for just a moment, because one of my ongoing bugbears right now is the lack of respect shown by all sorts of institutions, particularly government and businesses, but particularly government, to people, to taxpayers. And I was in a liquor store in British Columbia today, and there's a picture of a woman of indeterminate age. And the sign says, if you look under 30, we will demand ID. Now, I'm bad on women's ages. I often end up telling women they're, I guess, a lot younger than they are, and I don't mean to flatter them. But anyway, okay. So if you say you're, if you look under 30, and you say, well, I'm actually, I think legal drinking age here is 19, but okay, and I'm 19. We won't take your word for it. You have to show ID. Well, of course. Well, looking under 30 is a total judgment call, too, of course. So we'll demand ID of anybody, and that's male or female, if you look to be under 30. I said to the clerk, you know, if the government assumes I'm a liar and won't believe me, why should I believe them? You know, that's a good point. Why must you insist on treating us like children, or worse still, like crooks? You see, it comes down to respect. And a long time ago, and it may be a little hard to pinpoint exactly where, but at some point, and I see this more and more, government has decided that we are to be governed, to be controlled, the government will not respond to us, but will in fact control us. Anyway, Barbara Kay writes about the issue of the kneecap today. In the Saturday night French language debate in Montreal, four NDP, now that's the Socialist Party, four NDP leadership aspirants gingerly navigated the minefield of Quebec's Bill 62, nearing enactment, which will ban face coverings in the delivery and reception of publicly funded services. And I think it's a good law that you cannot be a civil servant providing a public service, let's say being a nurse in a public hospital or clinic, a teacher in a classroom, or a university professor, wearing a kneecap. In other words, if you're going to provide this service, you have to show your face, or at least show your eyes. Similarly, to receive that service. In other words, we're not going to deal with masked strangers, maybe except on Halloween. As good leftists, one and all, Charlie Angus, Guy Caron, Jagmeet Singh, and Nikki Ashton, these are the four candidates, oppose any such ban in their multicultural hearts, but desperately want to avoid offending Quebec nationalists and others such as this columnist, who find such a ban perfectly reasonable. My colleague Chris Selly, he's another columnist in the National Post, came down particularly hard on Nikki Ashton, that's a female, in his recent commentary in these pages for a ascription of Quebec's antipathy to the kneecap to the, quote, widely different place religion has held in Quebec since the Quiet Revolution, when Quebec massively turned against Catholicism and has adopted a kind of a militant secularism. Selly was having none of this standard defense. That is, that it is more about Quebec's political history than Islam per se, a position he labels hopelessly transparent rubbish. He then sarcastically elaborated on how very odd it seemed to him that only Islam was targeted in the ban, since, quote, Bill 62 places no restrictions on providing or receiving public services while wearing any religious garment or symbol other than the kneecap. And Barbara Kay answers, it isn't the least bit odd. Bill 62 is essentially a revival of Bill 94, a face cover ban proposal tabled in 2010, but killed when the Liberals won the last provincial election. It therefore predates the Liberals lost that election. She goes on to say, so while Selly's criticism of Ashton for soft peddling her opposition to Bill 62 for political gain was warranted, his follow-on conflation of Islamophobia with Bill 62 is unfair. The fact that the kneecap is an Islamic custom is correlational, and it's actually not all Muslims follow that, incidentally. That's a sort of cultural within some practitioners of Islam. She goes on to say the fact that the niqab is an Islamic custom is correlational, not casual. Not casual to Bill 62's motivation. The ban springs from a revulsion with how face covers interfere with social reciprocity in a public forum. Yes, I don't want to be to receive medication from somebody whose face is covered. I mean, I don't know who I'm dealing with. And similarly, if I were a nurse or a doctor or a teacher, I don't want to deal with somebody who basically is wearing a mask. It is not the fault of the Quebec government that only Muslim women wear the niqab. And if Islam were the target, why would Bill 62 give the hijab, which is unfortunately tolerated in Quebec, a pass? The hijab is sort of a scarf that covers the back of the head and sometimes the forehead, but leaves the eyes and much of the face open. And Barbara Kay goes on to say, the niqab is a sui generis to public life as public nakedness. In a previous column on this issue, I observed, that's Barbara Kay, that we do not permit public nakedness because we are not animals. We should not permit full cover because we are not things. To pretend that the niqab is merely a modesty variant of the hijab is as risible a distortion of what it is, and is really as plain as the nose on our face. That expression, plain as the nose on your face, is a metaphor for common sense. Reading each other's faces is a primal social need. It is no coincidence that the niqab is the common female uniform only in societies where women are generally viewed as chattel. In other words, just their possessions, their things. Face coverings on women triggers associations, perfectly legitimately, in any democratic society of women living under oppression. To be forced by political correctness to pretend that a face mask is a morally neutral accessory in public self-presentation, it's psychologically stressful and offensive to free people. No other modesty symbol so violates the implied social contact that allows for mutual trust in state-sponsored transactions. We have no choice in whom we deal with in the public service, and vice versa. Bill 62 recognizes that it's unfair to force citizens or public servants to negotiate obligatory civic terrain with faceless interlocutors, as a teacher or a provider of information or whatever. We should be able to see whom we're talking to. And that's a basic right of our civilized societies. And it has nothing to do with modesty. Catholic nuns, for instance, until fairly recently, sometimes wore elaborate habits, as they were called, which might be fairly modest head-to-toe tunic or tunic and top, and sometimes even a head cover, but their eyes and face were never covered. Similarly, the garb of Amish or Mennonite women, while having some sort of a head covering, does not cover the face. And whether that's just tradition or modesty, might be a topic for another discussion, but it does not interfere, whatever the modesty is required. And some cultures would prefer that women not wear dresses or skirts above the knee. That may be modesty. That has nothing to do with covering the face. And Barbara K. continues, Quebec need feel no shame in passing this long-anticipated and principled bill into law. Bill 62 will create a level playing field for optimal social integration of these women who yearn to become fully Canadian, but having the power within their kinship circles to unmask on their own authority. Bill 62 will be a liberation for them. For those women who are unwilling to unmask, well, they won't get jobs in the public sector. But Bill 62 makes it more likely that their daughters
will not perpetuate this gender retrograde custom. An acceptable trade-off, I think. NDP, that's the Socialist Party, New Democratic Party, feminists are all for gender equality until it butts up against multicultural pieties. Then they lose intellectual coherence as the Sunday night debates tortured evasions demonstrated. But if they truly believe niqabs do no harm to the women wearing them, or to their daughters, or to the social fabric, then they should have taken the honorable public position that Bill 62 is wrong, no matter how unique Quebec's religious history is, and be prepared to lose political ground over it, as they did in the last federal election, when the socialist leader went into the election with a very good chance, actually, to defeat the conservatives, or at the very least to come in as the official opposition. But his party went into free fall, largely, for several reasons, but one of which was clearly their stand on the head coverings, which lost them a lot of support in the province of Quebec, and rightly so. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Going to take a short musical interlude and play a song with Heather Miles and Justin Trevino, and this is called "This Time I Know We're Gonna Make It." And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio.
At Rogers, we believe you can find potential just about everywhere.
I'm trying to potential get even to the song here.
We survived the storm. take you. Facing life together will make it me and you. Just as long as we're together, we'll make it me and you.
And that's Heather Miles and Justin Trevino. This time I know we're going to make it. And here's another duet. Really, I like both these singers a great deal. The very beautiful Patti Loveless and Vince Gill in a great duet. And which I'm going to get up here in just a second. This is a great duet. Vince Gill, Patti Loveless and Vince Gill. My Kind of Woman, My Kind of Man. Vince and Patti. Coming up next, I'm in a place where the internet is quite slow.
But this is, we're going to sing you a song that we just released, and it's very reminiscent of what Porter and Dolly used to record together, and George and Tammy and Conway and Loretta, and tons of other great duets, but those three are extremely special, the records that they made and inspired folks like Patti and I, and hopefully this will follow suit with what all the rest of our collaborations have done.
You don't need diamonds, a big fancy car. You say you're happy.
My God's gentle hand.
And for the final song on our musical interlude tonight, I'm going to play another song by Patti Loveless. It honors the coal miners in her family and in so much of Appalachia, these hardy white people who worked extremely hard to earn a hard scrabble existence.
My grandfather was a coal miner, and my dad, he was a coal miner also. Actually, my whole family's life revolved around the coal mines. But in 1968, my dad decided to move us all to Louisville, Kentucky, in seek of medical treatment for black lungs disease and many other medical problems that he had. Even though Daddy died in Louisville back in 1979, he, like the rest of them, never survived those mines. In the deep, dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I traced my bloodline, and it's there I rest on a hillside gravestone. You'll never leave Harlan alive. Oh, my grandfather's dead across the Cumberland Mountains. He took a pretty girl to be his bride. Said, won't you
comes up about 10 in the morning and the sun goes down. About 3 in the day and you fill your cup. Whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life digging coal from the bottom of your grave.
See, she's unrepentant. Angela Merkel, the former, and I put former in quotation marks, communist. Actually, she's in the Communist Youth League in former communist East Germany, the DDR, German Democratic Republic. And then with the fall of the wall, just kind of instantly morphed into a Christian Democrat. Well, not much Christian about wanting to destroy your nation and flood it with unassimilable Muslim foreigners, but that's Angela. Actually, she's a real daughter of Count Richard Coutenhove Kalergi. Kalergi was the evil genius mastermind funded massively by Rothschild and other Jewish banking money to concoct and sell the idea of the European Union. He began way back in the 1920s. He was also a member of the Masonic Lodge in Vienna, Austria. Anyway, Coutenhove Kalergi envisioned a Europe without boundaries and without nationalities. Well, how are you going to get rid of Italians and Germans and Belgians and Frenchmen and so on? Well, what about mass third world immigration? In fact, he conceived of the new European as being a mixed race individual like himself. His mother was Japanese, his father was an Austro-Hungarian count. There'd be mixed race, but he thought they would look like his idea of the ancient Egyptians. Well, he was dead wrong anthropologically, but he thought of them as a mixture. He thought of the new European man as a mixture of African and Oriental. That was whites being largely bred out of them. Oh yes, and there'd be a new aristocracy, moral aristocracy, he said, which would be Jewish. Now this nightmare scenario is what is really behind the European Union. So when you read, as we did 2 years ago, what seemed to me the insane policies of Angela Merkel to flood her country with over a million unassimilable third worlders, most of them Muslims, most from the Middle East, some from Africa. And it seemed that this was on every possible level insane. And even if your main goal was to try to help the refugees, studies by the German government revealed that it would cost roughly $13,500 a year to support a so-called refugee in Germany. But you could support the same refugee in a refugee camp for perhaps about $3,000. So in other words, you would get a far bigger bang for your buck if you were to you could help far more people if you help them in refugee camps. But of course, that would not fit in with the long-range goal of Kuttenhof-Kalergi, which is population change. How you got to change the population, and one of the best ways to do that would be bring in large numbers of unassimilable foreigners. Anyway, she's just spoken up about this, and she's unrepentant. Chancellor Angela Merkel said yesterday that she did the right thing by allowing large numbers of illegals into Germany 2 years ago, and that Europe hasn't done enough to develop long-term solutions to the migration crisis since then. Well, I'd agree with her. Keep them out. Once they approach, as they come across the Mediterranean, turn the boats back, drag them back to Libya. Don't let them in. That will be a long-term solution. A day after discussing the continuing influx of migrants with leaders from Africa and other European countries, Merkel tackled head-on an issue that may still be a big one on the September 24th election in Germany. Let's hope it is. It was important right that we took people in back then in this exceptional situation. It is also right that we must find long-term sustainable structures, Merkel told reporters. Long-term sustainable structures. What does that mean? You've got an armed forces, haven't you? Use them. Oh, I like this one. Right down my aisle, alley. Another official resigns over ticket quotas. This is out of Tallahassee, Florida. Florida is confronting a growing blemish over whether the state's highway patrol is requiring troopers to meet ticket quotas for drivers, including millions of tourists each year who crowd its interstate highways. You know, how to exploit and abuse tourists who are actually would be part of the lifeblood of Florida. Top state officials insist quotas are not allowed, but the second highest ranking official in the Florida Highway Patrol resigned on Monday amid an ongoing review. Lieutenant Colonel Michael Thomas resigned after it was discovered that he sent an email in May that encouraged troopers to write 2 tickets an hour. In his letter announcing his early retirement, Thomas called the email a grave error and said he was taking responsibility for his actions. I think, and this is my observation, certainly here in Ontario, Canada, that he was only putting into writing, perhaps ill-advisedly, what is already nudge-nudge, wink-wink, the policy. This is a great way for revenueing. That is, like the ancient highwayman, who would hold up people using the king's highway and divest them of their coin or divest them of their jewels. The modern day highwayman is the state trooper or the state police or sometimes even the city police who devote unconscionable amounts of time to revenueing. Now, how do they do that? Well, they will hide and try to catch people exceeding the speed limit. As if that were the only form of bad driving. In fact, I would argue it isn't necessarily a form of bad driving at all. It can be. And you go back to first principles. The rule of the road, as certainly I learned it, and if you ever took a driving course, you probably learned the same. Is that you must be in control of your car at all times. That's your obligation. How you do that is up to you. For instance, the speed limit is not a prescription. That is, it doesn't say you must drive, say, 60 miles an hour. It is that you may drive up to 60 miles an hour, and I don't think that's the way it should be. But in icy weather, for instance, or snow, following the basic rule of the road, that is, you must be in the control of your car at all times, you would might well, if the roads are icy, and not drive 60 miles an hour. You might drive 30 or even less, because the rule is you must be in control of your car at all times. And it may be that to be in control of your car, you may have to drive considerably less than the speed limit in icy conditions or snowy conditions or foggy conditions, as the case might be. So it's not speed per se that is the menace, it's people not in control of their car. For instance, people who make rapid lane changes or without signaling, or people who stop and start. But I think the lack of signaling is one of the most dangerous forms of bad driving, I mean, one of the most ubiquitous forms. Well, how do you catch that? Well, it's a little more difficult. You know, you actually have to be out there in your vehicle driving the highway. In other words, doing what we would like to think we're employing a police force to do, rather than to collect revenue. So I'm glad to see there's a bit of a kerfuffle down there in Florida, and I think it's the duty of any libertarian to push back, fight back, and let the authorities know, first of all, that you know that this is nothing but revenueing, and you have absolutely zero respect for it. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. Shows repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever, played by the 48th Highlanders of Canada.